Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello and welcome to the iOS show. Not with your host Paul Wheatley today, I'll be your host Roddy McCleary, since Paul has at the last minute decided to abandon us and abandon you, our listeners, because he has better things to do. Paul's getting married this weekend, which apparently is an excuse for leaving your podcast pals up the creek without a paddle. Any creek, not a specific creek. We do, however, have most of the usual panel today. Ian, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
And what have you been up to, Ian?
I've been working like a dog. This is a bad week for me. I have lots of deadlines coming up, but next week will be fine and dandy.
By working like a dog, I take it you've been chasing sticks around in the park again.
Yes, and getting paid for it.
Good work. Next in the panel, we have Robert, or Street Machine. Robert, how are you doing?
I am doing quite fine, thank you.
Excellent. Have you got any exciting news since last time?
Not much, really. Might be going into business for myself once again. First time in 10 years. But that's pretty much it.
Excellent. That sounds exciting. Any particular business you can tell us about?
Just computer support stuff for not corporations, because I'm kind of tired of corporations right now.
Yes, maybe you can use some of your support skills in our trouble gusset later on.
I shall try my best.
You usually do, really. Okay. And next in our panel is Anthony Williams, who's the organizer of iOS Midlands. Anthony, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, guys. How are you guys?
Pretty good, pretty good. We're having a few technical difficulties, most of which are not having Paul today. But it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you.
It's always nice to have guests, because it means we hear less from Ian. Bit of friendly joshing rivalry there. So now that we've got the pleasantries, so it wasn't particularly pleasant, but the pleasantries out of the way, we'll go through our news for this week. So the first one in our pile of exciting news is that Apple has announced sales of 5 million iPhone 5s, and there have been 100 million iOS 6 upgrades for the opening weekend. Have you got any thoughts on the on either of those guys?
I don't want to sound like I'm repeating myself, but those are some big numbers.
They definitely are some big numbers, but a lot of people are saying they're not as big as the numbers they expected.
Well, indeed. I mean, there was an article at Business Insider saying, well, they've sold 5 million iPhones, but they sold nearly 4 and a bit million iPhones last time, so the growth curve is like tailing off, and it's indicative of everything kind of going south for Apple, and it's the golden years are behind them, and it's all doom.
But that's all that Business Insider actually say when they write about Apple, isn't it? Every single article I've read a headline, you know, that is really seems very, very down on Apple, always seems to be Business Insider.
Yeah, that I think it's run by that guy. Who is it? Blodgett? I think he.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has something against Apple for some reason.
I can tell.
Yeah.
So do you think there are any reasons? I mean, certainly the amount of iPhone 5s being sold is phenomenal for any product to sell that amount in, you know, its first few days of being on the market is great. Do you think we're starting to see a slowdown in the number of iPhones being sold? Is there maybe, could there be such a thing as a saturation point, even though people are upgrading?
Well, I think there's a limit to how many phones you can possibly make and sell successfully. And they have been trying to sell them in more markets on day one this time again. So the logistics around that mean, you know, maybe they're just kind of, maybe next year they'll sell 7 million iPhones because they've got all the channels in place.
So it's really a case of getting them into people's hands, really.
Yeah, but I had another point here.
Maybe if you remember it, you could tell us all, Ian.
Yeah, I'll shut up for a minute while you go on about something else.
Just about anything else.
I'm just wondering if there's any, you know, sane or rational people that think it's anything other than a successful launch, because, you know, 5 million devices of any kind that's sold, they've not all been sold for £529 each, but, you know, if you do the maths there, that's 2.2, just £2.5 billion worth of retail sales if they were all sold at retail.
Absolutely, and we would expect with the iPhone being a popular product that is going to continue. It's not just peaking right at the start, it will be ongoing, especially with people hanging on for upgrades. You know, a lot of people will be on 2-year upgrade cycles.
Yes, that was my other point, you've just reminded me, because the 4S was the first phone to break the usual kind of middle of the year cycle, so it was released later in the year, so more people were able at that point in the year probably to upgrade from their previous phone if they'd been previous iPhone owners.
Okay. Have any of you guys got an iPhone 5 yet?
Yes, I have.
I just wonder, because actually I'm one of the people who's on a slightly staggered upgrade cycle, and I think I'm due mine in December. I've shot myself in the foot somewhat, not literally, you'll be glad to know, but I had been on a price plan with O2 that would have got me a 3-month early discount, and I changed to a slightly lower, you know what, we were talking maybe last time or the time before about personal hotspots, and I said that I'd been on a plan that didn't support it, even though O2 did offer it. So I changed to a new price plan, and that's put me £1 under the limit to get the 3-month early upgrade. So now I have to wait till December. So I'm going to phone O2 and shout at them and act really unhappy. They're not going to give me an early upgrade, but it's going to make me feel better.
So they can actually do that in the UK? That's pretty crap, to be honest.
Oh, O2. I mean, I'm hopefully going to leave O2 and go to another popular mobile provider. In fact, that's a very good point, because the iPhone 5 now has LTE that will work in this country, in the UK, with Everything Everywhere. Have you had any thoughts, Anthony, now you've got your hands on an iPhone 5, about would you like to change provider to someone that will support that in a sort of reasonably... support it reasonably soon?
It's an interesting one, because my big thing with iOS has always been from day one about visual voicemail, and Everything Everywhere announced, I think it was last week, but they posted a tweet that said, you know, we're going to be supporting visual voicemail in 2013. And I've got to be honest, I've been very happy with O2, but it does make EE for me now a real alternative for
very
me tantalizing
for
to consider. Yeah.
Does anyone else in the UK support visual voicemail at the moment?
Not as far as I'm aware.
No,
I think it's just
O2. And I do not understand this, because for me, like you, Anthony, I thought this was one of the biggest selling points of the iPhone. I have terrible signal where I work, and so I get lots of voicemails, and it's really, really useful just to be able to see who are they from and be able to scrub through them when I'm listening to them. And the idea of having an iPhone and going back to the dial up, press one to listen to your voicemails model, just makes me go, ugh. So, you know, I want that, and I'm surprised the other networks haven't picked it up. I can't imagine O2 has any kind of exclusivity on it. I think it's just a technical limitation they can't be bothered to address.
I think it's more to do with the fact that O2 were forced to put it in place when the very first iPhone came out and the negotiations were going on there.
Yeah, because it was a halo feature, yeah.
Yeah, because there is a lot of work that has to be put in by the network. There's all things that have to be implemented. There's all sorts of things that the network has to do, and it's an investment for them. Of course, it doesn't matter how much you or I or anyone else thinks that it's a critical feature. If the network doesn't see it's a requirement for them, then they're not going to do it.
I certainly always find it weird when I look at people using iPhones and not having, you know, actually calling their voicemail. It seems so strange, and I don't think I could go back to a world without visual voicemail. In fact, I go so far as to say that anyone using an iPhone without visual voicemail is weird. And I realise I have probably just called about 80% of our listeners weird, but
they're certainly missing out on something, let's put it that way.
Yeah. If the networks are listening, I would pay extra for visual voicemail. Just putting that out there.
I'd pay up to £1.
If the networks are listening, I don't want to pay any more than I'm currently paying for visual voicemail. Thank you very much.
I'd pay an extra £1 to get my 3-month early upgrade, actually. There you go. So,
and in case any Swedish networks are listening, I would just like to say that please give me any kind of visual voicemail anytime this side of the year 3000, and I'll be happy.
You've given them a nice time frame there. I think visual voicemail will be a thing of
realistic.
The past. You'll have your voicemail piped into your mind by the year 3000, I'm sure. So moving on swiftly to our next bit of exciting news, a big nugget of news, in fact. Paul has titled it Mapgate, which I can see what he's done there. It's like the word map and then the suffix gate, obviously echoing the Watergate scandal. Obviously, iOS 6 brings with it Apple's new take on maps. We've lost the Google Maps, the Maps application in iOS 5 and before that uses Google's Maps, and moved on to Apple's own, which uses OpenStreetMap. And I've forgotten all the people that it uses now. Is it Yelp and TomTom?
It's TomTom for location stuff.
That's right. And there's some extra bits and bobs for satellite and the 3D. Which I believe was technology brought in by some of their acquisitions from the last few years. So it's been all over the news. Mapgate. The maps are apparently awful. People are driving into gigantic pits of boiling lava because of these terrible maps. Have any of you guys had bad experiences yet because of the new maps client?
As a matter of fact, I haven't upgraded, partly because of the new maps client. I'm just not quite convinced by the overall package of iOS 6.
Maybe we'll come on to that in a bit, because I'd like to maybe cover iOS 6 experience in a little more detail.
Well, all I'm saying is the iOS 5 maps app has never got me driving into a pit of boiling lava.
That's one down. Has anyone else driven into a pit of, or walked, or flown, or thrown themselves willingly into a pit of boiling lava because of,
or taken public transport into?
That's a valid way to burn yourself in lava.
I have driven into a town that doesn't exist with the maps application, because I actually work in Stratford-upon-Avon, which, if you search for Stratford-upon-Avon with the new maps client, you'll find a very large hospital called Shottery. And the entirety of Stratford-upon-Avon is covered with the pink kind of area overlay that they use for a hospital.
Is it a mental hospital?
I think it might well be. Warwick, where I live, doesn't exist on the map, and Leamington Spa is known as Royal Spa, which is a bit disappointing, really.
That actually sounds like 99% of the plots of Twilight Zone episodes.
Mm.
Robert, have you had any experiences, either good or bad, with the new maps application?
Navigation is actually surprisingly good, at least around these parts. But sadly, roughly 70% of the towns around here have just vanished from the map, so I don't know.
No. I mean, there seems to be a lot of weight behind this. It's not just Apple bashing this time. It's not as subjective as a lot of previous criticism of things Apple have brought out that haven't been quite as amazing as we hoped. The BBC News site has shown major towns that are incorrectly spelled, restaurants in the middle of rivers and that sort of thing. So Apple obviously have a problem on their hands. And to be fair, we've had their new Maps application out in the wild for, 2 weeks, whereas Google Maps has been around for, 7 years? So there is going to have to be some kind of evolution and natural development. Google Maps does have a sort of mechanism by which you can report incorrect things, and I believe the new Maps application does as well.
It does.
Have you actually spotted it? I've not seen it yet myself. Do you know where it is?
If you tap on the page curl by the on the corner of the maps, and then just to the right of where it says data provided by TomTom and others, you can say report a problem, and there's a whole interface that springs up from nowhere to let you do all sorts of things.
Do you think TomTom are going to ask for their name off of that soon?
To be fair to TomTom, I mean, the other guys were saying, the directions work surprisingly well, but if you're relying on local search to get a destination, you're screwed.
It did actually. It managed to get me from Edinburgh to Oldham driving last week. I had no idea where I was going, so it managed to get me there and back. Although those are fairly major routes.
Are you sure it was actually Oldham you went to?
I can guarantee you it was Oldham. I've certainly found in my experience that the first thing I did is I looked at the street where I live, and there's a coffee shop on the corner, and there were three of them all in the wrong place. So the maps generally, I mean, they seem to be reasonably solid in terms of street positioning where I live. Do you think part of it might be that if they have all these disparate sources of data being used, for points of interest, for streets, for satellite, do you think it's maybe just not all fitting together the way it should?
Well, I've been working on a maps-based project in my day job recently, and one thing I can tell you is that maps are hard. I don't really want to go into any more detail than that, because it's terrifying how many different sources of reference and things you have to deal with if you're doing mapping. I think Apple are kind of between a rock and a hard place here. They've had a lot of criticism because it feels like they're putting their own interests first here by breaking with Google, by kind of saying, well, we don't want to use Google's stuff anymore. We want to have control our own destiny where maps are concerned. And so for some people, it seems like they're not putting the users first anymore. But the flip side of that is, well, now you've got stuff you didn't have with iOS 5. You've got turn-by-turn directions. So you get some new stuff, and you kind of have to put up with the stuff that isn't quite as good yet, I guess.
Okay, and it's interesting what you say about severing ties with Google, because there's been a lot of discussion of that on. I know that John Gruber has brought this up in a few posts recently about, in fact, I think the New York Times had it as well, that Apple apparently had severed this or stopped using Google's Maps a year before their agreement with Google was actually due to expire. And there had been a lot of discussion about that. But what I was reading today seemed to suggest that it did have almost a year to expire, but with iOS coming out in a yearly upgrade, it's quite likely that service would have, that current contract would have expired before iOS 7 is due to come out. And it would make more sense to introduce their Maps application in a major release like iOS 6 than iOS 6.1.3 or whatever.
Yeah, and also given they've got tons of cash and they can do their own thing now, it's sort of a stronger bargaining position to break with it before the contract's up than, you know, getting to the end of it and then Google going, okay, so what do you want in this time? Do you want turn-by-turn directions in Google Maps for iOS? What do you want from us kind of thing? Whereas they've just kind of gone, we'll do our own thing now, thank you.
And I think we're only going to be looking at hopefully a short period of pain to get an application that Apple now has full control of and has it the way they want and are able to bring, like you say, functionality like turn by turn to us quicker than they would have been able to with Google. One thing I read that I thought was, I can't remember where it was, but it said that apparently Google were surprised that Apple were dropping it a year before the contract was out. And they did point out, Apple has been buying mapping companies and map-related companies for several years now. It can't be a surprise to Google.
Their search indexing isn't quite as well as we thought it was.
Yeah.
Okay, we move on a little bit.
There was one more thing, which has just gone out of my head as soon as I said one more thing.
You said one more thing like a regular Steve Jobs, Ian.
Yeah,
I don't think he forgot what his one more thing was at the end.
No,
of the
he was much better prepared than I was, to be fair.
Well,
no,
I suggest
remember.
You
Let's
do your
on.
Homework.
Let's move on. Let's cut this bit.
But what if it
never
was
speak
important?
Again.
No, we're not cutting it. We're leaving this in just to show that you're a fool, Ian.
Okay. I think that there was an interesting thing about just on the map subject. There was a real interesting thing that saying, Google are scrambling to build an app. And I'm not sure they are. I don't know. There's people saying that there's an app in waiting in the wings, waiting to be approved. That's been pretty much disproved. But Maps, the website, the Google Maps website, works surprisingly well on any iOS device. So I don't think there's going to be a big race to get it out there. The only thing I would imagine that there probably would be a race to get out would be some sort of iOS SDK to allow developers to put Google Maps back into their apps.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they'd be able to do that, though, because that SDK surely would be controlled. If it's going to be in iOS apps, then it's got to be an Objective-C and Cocoa API.
Yeah, which, if you look at Mapbox, I think Mapbox have done an iOS SDK that allow you to put their OpenStreetMap-powered maps into any iOS app that you've got. So it is possible that they
it's possible. It's
a huge undertaking.
It's allowed, I guess. I remember what I was going to say.
Go on, then.
Yeah, which is that I think a lot of people are annoyed that Apple don't seem to be acknowledging that there's a problem with maps, that the maps are not as accurate or functional as they were before, and that they've kind of saying, well, these maps are new and they're great and they're beautiful, and sure, if you're over in California, that's probably true, but for a lot of the rest of the world, they're not acknowledging that other people are having difficulties.
Except in China, where it apparently is a great upgrade.
Yes, that warms the cockles of my heart. So
why don't we all go and live in China instead, and then the maps will be great?
I'll stick with the rubbish maps.
One thing I've noticed is that you kind of have to talk to the Apple Maps application slightly differently. I think with Google, you could put in a slightly abstract thing. If you're looking for a bowling club near you, you put in bowling club, and it will usually find the nearest one. Or if you're looking for a street address, you really need to be more explicit. You can't just put in, Union Street. You have to put in Union Street, Aberdeen, for example, and then it will find it.
Yeah, like local. So they've kind of picked a lot of battles to fight here. There's the mapping data, which is super super hard, as Ian said earlier. There's local search, which is also really hard. It's a battle they're fighting on a lot of fronts.
And I guess Google do have all that different data, all the different search data, the mapping data, and they have everything interlinked, all the metadata is kind of interlinked, isn't it? So they don't have that massive ecosystem that Google have. They've got Yelp and TomTom. Well,
yeah, so the question is there benefit for Google in releasing an app again? Because obviously if it's easier for people to use, they're more likely to use it, and they can get the slim benefits they get from having people on their platform and serving ads and all the rest of it. But you know, I think there are a lot of things that Google previously released apps for. They'd rather put stuff on the web than in app form these days.
That's a good point. Although I think it'll be fine as a standalone application. I certainly did that. I knew the YouTube app was going, and I expressed surprise the first time I clicked a YouTube link, and I've now gone to download the app. And if there's a Google Maps application, I may download that if I find my mileage with Apple's Maps app isn't great. But you know, it gives you choice. I think that the only problem is that you're not going to have that integration into the OS, are you? So. We get choice, but we lose linking into things. I still can't get my DuckDuckGo search automatically in Safari, so it's all bad for me. My life's terrible, man.
I would like to have DuckDuckGo too. That would be nice.
In a perfect world, we will, Robert. We'll go and live on an island somewhere and eat pancakes and hold hands. Moving on to our next news item, just a brief one that I stuck in here. I read today that there'd been another sighting of Microsoft Surface running Windows 8 RT, is it?
And ooh, where? When?
Well, it was sighted.
Was it Loch Ness? Was Bigfoot carrying it?
Well, by Bigfoot you mean a big ape, and by that you mean Steve Ballmer, then absolutely.
Telegraph.
And Steve Ballmer apparently was parading around with a Surface, which is released on, I think it's the end of next month, October the 26th or something, Surface is released, and they still haven't actually let anyone touch it. So,
or told us how much it's going to cost.
No, so I think this is a portent of something, doom or otherwise. They're obviously hiding something. I know that there was a bit of news saying that Intel believe that Windows I keep calling him Tortellini, and that's not his name.
Paul Ottolini.
That's exactly what I said. Paul Tortellini from Intel has apparently said that Windows 8 will be shipped and won't be ready, so it will be beta or alpha or who knows. It'll be like the first release of an Apple OS update, I imagine.
Well, alpha is the new beta, so, you know.
Well, exactly.
Talking of doom, I heard that Rim said something this week.
Yeah, that's actually next on my little cobbled together list as well. But you say it, Ian, because it's a good one.
I hear they said that BlackBerry 10OS isn't quite here yet, but they made us a lovely song so that we could listen to that while we wait.
Oh, I've not heard the song. And that's not even the quote. I haven't heard the song. Do you know what the quote I saw, and this is the one I thought you were going to say, was that one of the RAM bosses said that they have a shot at being number 3.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is good. It sort of reminded me of the Austin Powers bit in The Loo.
They ain't going to be number 1. They'd struggle to be number 2. And so if they can actually consolidate as number 3, there is a market there. And there's probably money there. But I'm not convinced they even have that clear shot, to be fair.
But it's very Austin Powers, isn't it? Who is number 2? Nobody knows that sketch, do they? It's the bit in the toilet. It's very funny. I'll just have my little joke to myself then.
I'd rather bet my horses on WebOS compared to Rim at this point. That's kind of sad.
Oh dear. So, well, good luck to Rim.
I'm still in there with Symbian, ahead of Rim.
Probably a good choice, yeah.
Well, Nokia's still promoting it, for goodness sake.
Which is bizarre, considering their relationship with Microsoft. But anyways.
In fact, interesting, I can't remember if we covered this briefly last time. It does look like Nokia are having problems with their new handsets, the 920 and whatever, because they don't have Windows 8 to show on it yet. So they're launching new phones without a ready OS for it. So this is possibly a little bit worrying for Microsoft in the mobile OS space.
Yeah, because if there's one thing you can say about Nokia, it's that they know how to ship hardware on time. So if they're not shipping hardware on time, it's probably not their fault.
I don't actually know if Nokia do ship their hardware on time, so I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not.
Generally speaking, when they have a big release and it's really, really important, they're quite good at getting handsets out in a fairly short order. It's not guaranteed, but they're very good at volume and logistics and all that kind of stuff.
And well, that's the thing. They have got the handset ready. It's just they don't have anything to run on it.
Yeah.
So maybe they can talk to the WebOS guys.
But I think we should put the Rim video in the show notes for those who haven't seen it.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I bet it's a riot. And moving on very quickly to the last, it's not really a news item at all, but since Paul has left us, then I'm just going to put whatever I like into the news section, really. So, Paul. I just wonder if we briefly go through any particularly standout good or bad experiences of iOS 6 that we've had so far. We've had, well, Ian, you've had none because you don't have it.
Yep, I'm a curmudgeon when it comes to iOS 6.
You're a curmudgeon. I know, though, that when I saw you the other night, Ian, at our Mac user group, that's great fun, and we cover iOS as well, we were looking at, I thought the clock application for the iPad looks pretty nice.
I thought we were just comparing super hexagon scores.
We were just comparing super hexagon scores, weren't we? This has been consuming my life since it was your pick last time.
Well, it's consuming my life too, if it makes you feel any better. Yeah, so are we going to talk about the clock? This is a weird one. So, context. Some people have been pointing out that the clock on the iPad in iOS 6, which is a new thing on the iPad, it didn't used to have a clock, looks awfully like the traditional and, I think, trademarked Swiss railway clock. So you can buy, for example, a wristwatch from a company called Mondain that looks just like it.
Is this the icon?
No, it's the clock itself.
The clock face is a trademark of the Swiss Railway, isn't it, or something to do with that?
And Apple seem to have, if not copied it, made something that looks substantially similar.
It's a straight copy. I think anyone.
It's a Samsung of clocks.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
They pulled a Samsung.
Let's just hope they've got enough in their coffers to fight any lawsuits. I'm gonna have to look at this clock now. Hang on, right. I've got my iPad here, and you know what? That really does look like a clock.
Having been on Swiss railways and having seen those clocks in the flesh, yeah, it's pretty identical.
Well, watch out, Apple's lawyers.
Well, they've not said anything about it, so.
I imagine there'll be an amicable and lucrative settlement somewhere.
Okay. So,
And maybe they'll offer to design trains for the Swiss Railway as preparation or something.
I'd like to see that. Interestingly, though, there has been no clock update for the iPhone, has there?
No, still. Oh no, it is. It's the hands are straighter. They were pointier, but now they're straighter.
So just completely bent, sort of 360 degrees.
That would be a strange clock.
There is Salvador Dali.
But there was a really kind of anal, detail-y post I read on a Japanese blog, which was just like, these are the very tiny details that have changed between iOS 5 and iOS 6, and the clock hand shape was one of them.
Okay, I thought the weather application now on the iPhone looks a lot nicer. It's just reskinned, but it's got a much kind of clearer look to it. I think they might have changed the font that they use.
When you're on an iPhone 5, you actually now get a side-to-side sliding view of the next 24 hours of weather, whereas on the previous handsets, you have to tap on the weather to get a scroll list to show you what the upcoming time is. So it's quite nifty.
Has anyone actually got the new Find My Friends kind of notifications things to work?
Yes. We've actually set that up. My wife... uses that to know when I've left work now.
That's a bit creepy, though, isn't it?
So it's like, oh yeah, you've left work. Yes, I've gone for lunch. Yeah.
So if I want, I've got Ian on mine now, so I know where he is. He's at home, apparently.
You might be right.
So how do I actually get it to work? I've been, you see, notify me is grayed out, so do I need to, does he need to allow me to?
I think both of you need to be using iOS 6, and both of you need to be using the new Find My Friends app.
Ah, okay, so maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
I think.
Because I've not had it enabled for anyone, so cool, I'll just wait for all my friends to update to iOS 6, and then I'm going stalking crazy. Sorry, more stalking crazy. Have there anyone else had any particular experiences of note with iOS 6? With the new iTunes, the new App Store view?
The App Store view, I think, is terrible.
I don't like the search results, the way that you only sort of, you almost get one at a time now.
It's one of the things I really like about the new App Store app is that you no longer have to type in your password to update apps.
That's great.
Which is
finally.
I'm sort of pleasantly surprised every time I don't. It's never got dull that I don't have to enter it.
And it's also nice that you don't have to now switch back to Springboard for all your apps to update as well. They'll just do that within the app as well. But the search view where you have to swipe from left to right to get the search results is tedious at best.
Do you know what I've really been getting into on iOS 6 is because I hate people. I mean, really, all people, they sicken me.
It's true.
And the new Do Not Disturb and kind of call rejection features are brilliant. You can just, you can not answer the phone, and it replies to somebody with a custom message saying, I hate all human life. It's effortless. I don't have to, you know, grouse at these people and go, why are you calling me? It's 11 in the morning. I should be asleep. No wonder I'm depressed. And I can be curmudgeonly without even speaking to another human being.
Except, of course, people like me who are on your VIP list, right?
Yeah, you're definitely there on the VIP list, Ian.
Yeah, thought so.
I'm not even sure. I think I deleted you out of my contacts.
So I have a question. have any of you iOS 6 using folks done anything interesting or useful with Passbook yet?
If by interesting you mean gone to Starbucks, swiped on my home screen and paid with nothing but my phone, then yeah, I guess that's interesting. But
that's quite interesting.
Have you done that?
I have, yeah.
That's interesting.
I was going to kind of duck out of giving an app of the week and instead give you a website of the week, so I've got a little tip for that later if you want.
Well,
if
you just hold that now. You hold that to the right time, because yeah. Paul might not be here, but we're abiding by his rules. We're not really, but yeah, well, there'll be a little moment for you to pull that one out of your, well, wherever you're concealing it right now. There is one last thing in the news, because we'll need to move on in a minute, and Ian is prompting me with a little electric poke there. The iPhone 5 is using custom silicon. Ian, tell us. Ian loves stuff like this.
I read a blog called Anantech fairly religiously, and they are interested in things like chips and memory and the hardware details.
And I'm sure all our listeners are really interested about this as well. So on you go, Ian. Knock yourself out.
So the chips that have been used in iPhones to date have been a variance of the ARM core, which, as we all know, date back to the days of the Archimedes computer, which was... let's skip over that. Basically, the ARM cores have been getting more and more capable over time, and there was a question as to what Apple was going to use in its new iPhone. So Anantech guessed that it was going to be the same core as the 4S used, but a bit faster. But what they've done is they've surprised us a bit. They've actually built their own variant of the core. Before, they had licensed the standard design, and now they've kind of customized it. So it looks like all those acquisitions they did a few years back of people that know about semiconductors and chips have come good, because they've actually built something that is different, and it seems to be quite good.
Hey, I know a thing, Ian. Can I say my thing?
Yes.
The new chip that they're using is hand-designed, apparently. The layout, the actual architecture of all the little electric wires or whatever it is inside have been done by hand instead of by software and algorithms and things. That's a thing I know.
That's interesting. And that's a very Apple thing to do, I think.
And it makes it more... It optimizes it, apparently. Makes it more efficient at higher clock speeds.
But it seems to be a very power-efficient chip and very fast for for what it is. And it's also interesting because most of the other phone manufacturers are still using the standard designs. And the next step up in the kind of processor designs available is one that is rather less power efficient. So Apple have decided not to go from an ARM A9 to an ARM A15, but they've done their own thing.
And this is called, am I right? I think it's called A9S. I might be talking rubbish now. There was something about...
I don't know, because the A9 is a standard ARM design, but they've kind of just customized it. They've used bits and pieces, but I don't know how closely it resembles a standard ARM design.
And I don't either.
But Samsung are the only other people out there that are kind of doing their own custom silicon designs at the moment, and they're not quite customizing to the same level. So it kind of puts the pressure on the other phone vendors to sort of, you know, up their game and become more power efficient and, you know, try and... stay with the, well, I mean, in performance terms, it's very good in single-threaded applications, which is what you want for a phone. Not so good in multi-threaded applications, but you don't need so much of that on a phone, so it holds its own quite nicely.
That's fascinating, Ian. If any of our listeners would like to hear more of Ian talking about those kind of things, listen to the iOS show on the British Tech Network, which is this.
As a quick aside to that, actually, a thing I remembered. I think I saw a quick blurb. I think Gruber said something again. That the new chip in the iPhone 5 is now faster than the processor they used in the old PowerBooks.
Oh, I'd seen that on, is it Geekbench?
Geekbench, yeah, exactly.
The iPhone 5 had come in quicker than the fastest G5
I think it was the G5,
Power Mac,
yeah.
Was it, or something? No, it'd be a G5 Mac Pro, wouldn't it? I think it was faster than the fastest PowerPC Mac, I think is what they said, with a Geekbench of 1500 odd, and I think the fastest PowerPC was just at 1500, so we have moved on quite a bit. In fact, this sort of echoes what we were talking about a few weeks ago, weren't we? Well, doesn't it, when we were talking about comparative performance? That was another really interesting conversation. And on that note, I think we can wrap up the news section and throw ourselves headlong into the depths of the trouble gusset, which is where the strangely named part of the show where we attempt to fix your problems, that those being particularly your iOS or phone or iPad related problems rather than any personal problems you might have that are dragging us into. We've sort of touched on this. I think I told somebody to shut up earlier because Andrew Bowles has got in touch with us in some capacity. I don't know, because Paul hasn't said whether it was an email or a personal visit to his house. Andrew Bowles asks, can I get Google Maps back in iOS 6? Gentlemen.
Not if you don't want to jailbreak your phone. Well, unless you want to go to maps.google.co.uk.
Yes, you can get the Google Maps application, or the old Maps application from iOS 5 and before, unless you jailbreak, is that right?
Some clever developer has apparently made that happen. I read something about that this morning. I didn't make any note of it, unfortunately. But that has been done, but it does require a jailbreak.
But then, as you said, maps.google.co.uk or .wherever you are, you can load up that site and you can just use the share thing in Safari to add that to your home screen, can't you?
Sure, yeah, which is what I've done and what a lot of people that I know have the iOS 6 have done as well.
Do you find the performance okay in the web app? I mean, does it cache at all, or...?
I'm not entirely sure what it does in terms of using HTML5 features that are available to it, but it does seem very snappy. There's no massive issues with it that I've found.
And everything's in the right place.
Indeed. Or as right as Google Maps would have you believe.
And so that's probably our answer for Andrew Bowles. You've got these two options. One is to jailbreak, but with the caveats of, you know, you're potentially losing the security of your phone. And of course, you could brick it, potentially jailbreaking it. Or you could use the Maps web app from the Google Maps website as a web app on your phone. Or you could just wait, because as we mentioned earlier, there is potentially a Google Maps iOS app on the way.
Or maybe Google will just keep improving the web app and make it like good enough so they don't actually put out a proper app, theoretically.
That's an interesting point. Any other ideas for that one? Or are there any other map solutions that are worth looking at in addition to Google? No. Is that a no?
Mapbox. Sorry, I was drinking. Mapbox is the other thing, or OpenStreetMap, and of course that's what Mapbox base all of their data on. And like I said earlier, they definitely have a number of applications using their SDK. I think Foursquare actually uses the Mapbox SDK. And it was quite interesting to see Foursquare put something out not so long ago saying, with the new Maps app in iOS 6, your local search really suffers. But if you switch over to Foursquare, the local search results that you'll get might actually be a little better. So it could be worth downloading Foursquare or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, we move on to our next question. Rummaging around in the bottom of the trouble gusset, we have Peter Brown. And Peter Brown asks, states that he is just getting the iTunes plugin screen after an iOS 6 upgrade on his iPhone 4.
That's not a question.
I changed it to a statement as I was saying it, so I corrected myself. Have you got anything constructive to say, Ian?
No, I don't know anything about plugin screens, I'm afraid. I'm just criticising.
Well, I think we all remember the iTunes plugin screen, the Kinect iTunes screen from when we got our first iPhone.
Has Peter tried plugging it into iTunes?
I'm guessing that as a listener of the show, he's obviously a man of great intellect and distinction, and would have done that. I'm getting a bad feeling off of getting that screen after an iOS 6 upgrade. I think my first thing that I might try from experience of getting that screen in bad situations or unexpected situations is to try and do a restore, either through iTunes or by using how'd you get into restore mode, guys? Can you remember?
If you want to restore it from an iCloud backup, or if you want to restore it from an iTunes backup?
I think I meant if you want to do a sort of factory reset.
Sure.
It won't restore, if you can't get in to do the iCloud backup, but you can go to iTunes.
There's the whole home button and power button thing to put into DFU mode.
You hold them both down and it resets, and you keep the home button held down and let go of the power button as it powers off.
That's
and then iTunes should say, "I've found a phone in restore mode," and you should be allowed to restore using the iOS 6. Well, either iOS 6 that you've got in iTunes, or it will download it for you and restore. I would say if restoring it doesn't do it, it might be a genius bar job.
From what I've seen on, certainly from the upgrade from iOS 4 to iOS 5, you had to do a restore, and I think in certain cases you had to do a, I might be wrong here, but you had to do a DFU restore in certain cases. So that may be an issue that he's got.
Of course, if you are going to do a factory reset, like a DFU mode factory reset, I do hope you've got your stuff backed up first.
And iCloud would be handy there.
iCloud, yeah, absolutely. Any other suggestions for that one, guys? I'll take that as a no. Good luck with that, Peter. If you do want a follow-up question, you can always give us a shout and we'll give you our contact details later on. The next one is from Andrew Mack. The appropriately named Andrew Mack. Well, he'd be appropriate if this were a Mac show and not an iOS show. Great link there. I'm not quite sure what Paul's written here, so I'm going to read it out as Paul has written it. App installing updates, in inverted commas, handing after iOS 6 upgrade. I guess he means hanging. Does he mean hanging?
I think I might know what he's talking about here.
Well, because we had one of the
guys I work with who got his iPhone 5 when he upgraded to iOS. Sorry, on his iPhone 4S when he upgraded to iOS 6 and restored everything over iCloud, the downloading of the apps as part of the restore process takes an awful long time, and if you lose your connection for whatever reason, you'll be left with a load of apps on your home screen that are stuck saying loading.
Okay.
Now, the simple way around it is, it's horrible, but you have to tap the app once and then tap it again, and that sometimes knocks it out of its little cycle.
You're kidding.
No,
that's like whacking your old TV on the side, isn't it?
It's
like I've got a Mac Classic 2 that I've had sitting in a corner of my room, and it's a really old computer. You know, it's, God, is it 21 years old or something? Every time I switch that thing on, it would switch on first time, effortlessly. I've just gone to all the trouble and expense of buying, you know, an old modem and all the cables and stuff to just get it online for a laugh, you know, dial up and old school and showing the kids how we used to go on the internet back when we lived in caves. And, you know, as soon as I spent all that money on extra stuff for it, it stopped firing up, it stopped booting. So I've been battering this poor old Mac Classic 2. If there's any surface on that machine I can slap with an open hand, it's been getting a good leathering, and I think I've broken it now. So there's probably something we can all learn from that. So Andrew Mack, you might want to try tapping your applications, as Anthony said, and good luck with that. The next one is from a friend of mine, actually, who called me asking me to justify his purchase of an iPhone 5 to himself so that he could then relay that to his girlfriend before she killed him. And he said one thing he didn't like about iOS 6 on his existing phone was that, why have all the menu bars gone blue? Take it by menu bars, he meant the the bar with your carrier and your signal strength and your clock and everything. And that was one thing I did think, they had all gone blue as well. But I'm beginning to think, and I'd like some backup from you guys on this, that in some applications it actually goes a different color, and it seems to be matching the menu bar to your to the general color of the application.
You've nailed it right there.
Because I know if I fire up Skype, it goes a very pale blue, like the Skype application. But a lot of apps do still seem to just be black in the type, whatever bar. What do we call that bar?
It's the status bar.
The status bar, that's a good name. I like
so
that
evident,
they call...
Oh, sorry, sorry. Evidently, so, he just has too many blue applications. He needs to have fewer blue applications, and the menu bars won't be blue anymore.
Well, certainly the native mail application has a blue header. I think the messages one does as well.
Settings seem to be turning it a bit blue as well for some reason.
Oh, do they? Let me have a look at that. I mean, Safari leaves it black. I thought for a minute it might almost be like in OS X, since they had the transparent menu bar, that it would be a bit like that, that it just, you know, it's slightly transparent and it's the same hue as your background image, and it was sort of trying to emulate that.
You've as a developer, you've got an option. You can either choose to have the black status bar for your application, or you can have the standard status bar. Now, my understanding is if you have the standard status bar, it'll take the bottom row or sorry, the bottom pixel of the UI title bar, whatever. I might have got that name wrong, but the title bar at the top of the app, it'll take the bottom pixel from that bar there and use that to colour the top.
That's pretty cool.
So if you, for instance, go into your settings app and turn on the Nike Plus feature and then go into the Nike Plus app, it should, I believe, go red.
Well, I might be trying that out, but you won't catch me running. Well, that's interesting. I think we've almost resolved that one, so thank you.
Is that because you're so good at running fast, Roddy?
You don't want to see me running.
I won't even see your dust, apparently.
It's not a good sight. Not a good sight. I have one more question for the Trouble Gusset, which was thrown in there by actually my dad, who emailed me today, and it was very busy, and I palmed him off with some kind of crap answer. But it's a good point. Can he run two iPhones using the same iTunes account? Now, I don't think he necessarily just means having the same iTunes account for in on phone purchases or in app purchases and iTunes and things like that, but actually running two off of the same Mac, you know, the same instance of iTunes. Are there any things that, I mean, I think it's because my mum's got an iPhone, my dad's got one, they're not great with technology, and I think he wants to run them all off his account so he can pay for anything that she buys and that they can all sync it to their Mac. Is that a bad idea or a good idea?
You can do it. I do it. I even share an iCloud account with the wife, so we when we take pictures of our children, we get the same photos appearing on both
phones. I know Paul does something similar, but he's not here doing something different.
But yeah, you can do it. It is possible. You just you sign both accounts up, or rather both phones up with the same App Store account. And if the great thing is now, I think the App Store accounts and the iCloud accounts, they're all completely separate, so you can log into different apps, log into different accounts on different applications.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that sounds correct, yeah.
So it should work okay.
Well, iTunes should always treat them as separate devices, so on that level alone, it will definitely work.
And there's not a problem if they plug it into, you know, one Mac or the other Mac, or...
That's where it gets interesting, because, of course, iTunes will complain and cry foul and say, actually, no, your library isn't on this machine, so I'm going to have to wipe you and synchronize you with this library.
Of course, right. I think that's the one I've seen before that made me a little bit hesitant. Okay, well, I'll get him to try that, and we'll see how long it takes before he phones me at some god-awful time. Your mum's phone's broken, she's freaking out. That'll be fun for me. Thanks, guys. Okay, so we can now pull ourselves out of the...
It's not like you don't have spare Macs you could give them, Roddy.
No, there are no Macs in this house. No, all the Macs are in this house. Shall we try and extract ourselves from the Trouble Gusset now, gentlemen?
Yeah.
I think it's probably for the best. Now, this is the bit I've been looking forward to for the entire duration of this podcast. Paul, always every week, thanks our sponsors, and now I'm going to thank our sponsors. I've got the script that Paul uses to thank our sponsors, which I'm going to try and read without sounding like Paul. So, this podcast and all of our other podcasts on the British Tech Network wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They've kept the British Tech Network afloat for over 3 years now. They are brilliant and you should use them, says Paul Wheatley. We have a whole pile of voucher codes for various discounts and services from UK2. If you could make sure you visit them by coming to britishtechnetwork.com first and clicking on the link on the left so they know we sent you. Paul says, UK2, they are awesome. That's Paul's view, but it's also the view of all the rest of us in the British Tech Network who appreciate their contribution greatly. Now you get to listen to all of the voucher codes I'm going to read out. If you would like free DNS for 2 years, the code is British Tech DNS, which is all in capitals here. British Tech Domains will get you 15% off, presumably a domain registration. Oh, sorry, it used to get you 15% off. Now it gets you 20% off. If you want 50% off your first month's virtual private network charges, it's British Tech VPN. British Tech Server will get you £50 off any gigabit server that's on any contract length that's online. Sorry, that's online. You can't ring up and get that deal. You've got to do it online. British Tech VPS gives you your first month's free with a VPS server. And Paul says, there you go, UK2. They support British Tech and you should support them. And I agree. That was possibly the most awkward thing I've ever had to do that would be listened to by other people. So thank you for your patience, and thank you for choosing UK2. Now we'll move to the last section of our always thrilling podcast, the picks. Now, it may be something to do with I'd left it to the last minute and Paul threw me a curveball, but I don't have one. But I'm just going to quickly look at my iPhone and find one while I pick on someone else. So who would like to tell me their pick first? Actually, Anthony, you had a site, didn't you?
I did. If I jump in, it wasn't an app as such, so I'm kind of copping out.
Your first time on the show and you're cheating.
Well, you know.
I don't know, some people.
So we were talking about Passbook earlier, and there's a way for you guys to check it out, which is if you go to passsource.com on your phone, and that has a load of little Passbook templates that will allow you to test the feature out. Because this is really something that needs to be put together by the providers of the service. So, for instance, it's really going to be up to Starbucks to make the most of the Starbucks Passbook feature. But you can test it. If you put in your Starbucks number, it will give you a Passbook to stick in your Passbook, and you're done. You're away.
And presumably, smaller retailers can make their own Passbooks. Is that right?
Well, this is the most interesting feature, I think, or one of the most interesting features of iOS 6, because it's going to do an awful lot for retailers, and anyone, really, to allow them to offer things like voucher codes, discounts, all
kisses
sorts of things.
To the ladies?
Of course.
Yeah. That might be a bit creepy, actually. We'll maybe forget that one. I did suggest to a friend of mine runs a small coffee shop, and he's quite the entrepreneur, has lots of ideas for marketing his coffee shop through Twitter and through social media. And I did suggest, that I think the site that you mentioned there, PassSource, and there are a few other ones as well. And I sent him a few of those in case he wanted to try and make up his own little passbook for his clients. Mm. And I'd like to try it out, because I'd like to have something I could use in passbooks. I don't fly Lufthansa all the time, so...
There's also for, I know we don't normally talk about Android, but someone has actually released an Android app that can read the Passbook formatted files. So it's for your friend, it's certainly something to think about, because there's a huge scope for it now.
And for any poor fool who's got an Android
that hasn't had it wiped with that nasty.
Yeah, poor fools. Who's next? Ian, have you got a pick?
I haven't. But I will just say, if you haven't already downloaded my pick from last time, Super Hexagon, go and do it, because it's great and I'm still playing it.
Yeah, you swine. I downloaded that off the back of what you said, and it is maddening. Although I'd just like to say, for the record, I am beating Ian's time on Game Center at the moment, so stuff you, Mackay.
Only on the easiest difficulty, McCleary. Only
stuff
on the
you
easiest
and your
difficulty.
No pick. I get to mock you for not having a pick, because I've found one now. So, Robert, have you got a pick for this week?
Yes, I've been digging around in the old apps I got a whole long time ago, and I actually found I have The Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition.
Oh, that's a beauty.
It's a great game, and this Special Edition really makes the whole adventure come alive again.
Are you
it
playing
was
that
great
on your phone?
Back in the day.
Are you playing that on your phone?
On the phone, yes.
Okay. I got the iPad one, and it does look lovely, but it maybe benefits from the bigger screen?
I would suspect it does. I haven't checked out the iPad version yet, but it looks terrific on the iPhone alone. I can only imagine it looks so much better with an even bigger screen.
And it's worth noting that they've redone all the artwork, haven't they?
Oh yeah, oh, it's gorgeous. And you love the simplicity of the old one, yeah, but the new stuff, it looks really, really good.
Am I right in saying you can flip back to the old style graphics as well? Did I just make that up?
No, I think you can.
Well, it's good to see I'm just not just making things up like I do usually then. It's reassuring.
No.
So do we know how much that one is?
£1.99 apparently.
You've made me realise I don't know how much mine is, so it's not like I'm just Googling it now. But I am, right? So my pick, I actually almost got two, but my main pick, I don't know how long it's been on the App Store for, but I noticed that Choo Choo Rocket is on there, and that's a game I had it with my on my first Dreamcast, and it's a crazy little game in which, how can you explain it? You have to point little mice in the direction of their rocket so that it can go back to... I'm not even sure it tells you where they go. to
some strange mouse planet,
because of course mice live on a different planet. That would make perfect sense. And it's a very sort of simple conceit that you put down arrows to you've got a set amount of directional arrows to let the mouse, to point the mice in the right direction. They just sort of run. They'll always turn clockwise, I think it is, unless they hit one of your arrows. And that would sort of seem nice and simple, where they're not cats trying to eat them before they get in their rockets. It's pretty exciting. It does have a multiplayer version as well. Multiplayer was great on the original Dreamcast version. It is on the UK App Store. It's £1.99. I can see, having hurriedly looked it up. And it does have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi for a multiplayer. I think there are a few little, you know, the interface is maybe a little fussy, but it's still the classic game as it was, and it's tremendous, although slightly stressful at times, fun.
It's quite brilliant.
It is. So I remember on my first Dreamcast.
Well, now you can remember.
Point of order, they're not cats, they are Kapu Kapus.
Oh, I've been a bloody fool, haven't I? Kapu Kapus. I was just looking at the thing, of course they're Kapu Kapus.
Or at the very least, space cats.
Don't ever speak to me again, Ian. And on a Top Gear-esque bombshell, I think that pretty much wraps up what has been definitely an eventful podcast. In Paul's absence, I'm sure something resembling normal service will resume next time. And before we go, we'd like to thank you, the listener, and also just give you some contact details in case you'd like to have a little bit of a chat with us away from the podcast. Actually, don't do that. That'd be really weird. But if you want to, you know, send in anything for the Trouble Gusset next time, or any other things you'd like us to cover. Ian, how can people get in contact with you?
Generally via the Twitters. It's a fairly reasonable place to hang out. I hear there are other exciting social networks going on, but Twitter's the one where I mostly spend my time, so whatever. I go by Maniac Yak, which is ManiacYak.
Okay, and Robert, how can we get in touch with you?
Same as with Ian, I'm on Twitter. I still haven't moved over to that new cool thingy that all the kids are on the AppNet, but I'm at Streak Machine, all in one word.
Okay, Anthony?
I'm a bit gone on pretty much every social network there is, or you can get hold of us at iOS Mids.
As iOS Mids, is that a hashtag or
No? That's a Twitter account as well, which we post to when we're meeting up. And if you're ever down in Birmingham or Leamington on the last Tuesday of the month, give us a shout.
Sounds cool. You can get, if you wanted to get in touch with me, if you're brave enough, I'm RODTI on Twitter and also on AppNet because I'm a ponce. We'd love to hear from you. As always, if you'd like to give us a glowing review or a constructive but not so glowing review on iTunes, we do love to have your feedback. So please don't be a stranger and let us know. For now, we'd like to thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you all in a couple of weeks' time. Cheerio.